your computer's online. Archiving 44K. Initiate sequence.
T minus 30 seconds.
Server connection confirmed.
T minus 25 seconds.
Live stream for T120K.
T minus 20 seconds.
Phone lines are go.
T minus 15 seconds.
Satellite uplink verified.
T minus 10 seconds.
Flight check complete. Satellite uplink verified.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Welcome to Black Op Radio, the voice of political conspiracy research. You're listening to Black Op Radio, the show NSA doesn't want you to hear. Now here is your host, Leno Sanic.
Control room, you're on the air.
Hello everyone, welcome to another episode of Black Op Radio. This is your host, Leno Sanic. Today we're speaking to author Vince Palomera. Hello, Vince.
Hello, Len. Hey, great to be on the show again, and thank you to yourself and to all your listeners. Much appreciated.
Great. You have a new book, Plot to Kill President Kennedy in Chicago and Other Traces of Conspiracy Leading to the Assassination of JFK, a Visual Investigation. And it's on Kindle and paperback, and it's just being released. I saw you had a photo of some hardcover books you had that people could email you directly, but otherwise they can go to Amazon. And when is the official release date?
Okay, the official release date in America is November 8th for the paperback. And there might be some conflicts outside of the United States, but for the U.S., the Kindle's available now. I personally prefer paperback. I mean, the Kindle looks splendid, looks fine, but I like paperback because you can instantly go back and forth real quick to documents and the index and everything else. But yeah, so it's worldwide November 8th, all territories for Kindle and paperback. But in America, you can get the Kindle now and the paperback will be November 8th. Yeah.
Right. Very good. You've written many books on the assassination and the Secret Service. What inspired you to pick up Chicago and these other avenues of
What happened was really bizarre sequence of events last year. Some personal tragedies. Well, it's not in order sequence. Well, maybe I'll just say it in sequence. My wife's grandmother passed away in a car accident unexpectedly last March. And then my mom passed away, of all dates, November 22nd. You might think, Vince, that's sad, but what's that have to do with anything? Well, what happened was, in the middle period, soon after my wife's grandmother passed away, I started getting all these weird calls from Florida. And I'm like, okay, what's going on? Why does somebody keep calling from Florida? And I rarely pick up, especially strange numbers. But these weren't being flagged as robocalls or political calls. So I was like, okay, I'm not going to say who I am. I'll just say maybe it's me or something. I picked up and it was this guy. And make a long story short, and people see in the book how it started, the reason why I wrote this book was, I'll just cut to the chase. A former Secret Service agent in the Chicago office, Nemo Ciocina, reached out to me through an intermediary. Nemo ended up passing away a few months later, also in 2023. I didn't find out about that till early this year. He basically swore me to secrecy about what he had to reveal, and I'm revealing it in the book and so much more. But what happened was I immediately knew the name was real. He reached out through an intermediary, a young gentleman who didn't want to give me his last name. I'm like, okay, cut the crap. I'm going to hang up. What's this all about? He goes, do you know a Secret Service agent named Nemo Ciocina? And I immediately said, wow, to myself, I'm thinking, I immediately knew that name. And it turns out, as I noted in my first book, and I noted in this one, I reached out to Nemo because I was well aware of him being a Chicago office agent back in 2005. He didn't answer my letter, but he's in House Select Committee files. He's in other files, presidential protective files in the 60s. So I immediately was like, oh, wow. And Nemo himself actually got online and spoke to me. And he gave me the name of a suspect, and he didn't want me to divulge anything until he passed. He says, I don't want my name in anything. He says, it could still be dangerous now. Well, he ended up passing away. What happened was, the reason why the sequence of events is so crucial, the personal tragedies, is when my mom got sick and passed away, this research and everything was the first in my mind. What Nemo told me in confidence And I thought he was still alive. So I'm thinking, well, I'm never going to publish it. And now that my mom passed away, I'm not thinking about a case. I'm not thinking about another book. Forget it. Well, one time, just at my leisure, it might seem a morbid thing to do, Len, but since 1998, when I first got online, oh, I don't know, countless times through the years, I do a Google search. I do a website search to see who has passed away from the Secret Service. I plug their names in, see if there's any obituary, especially now it's so prevalent the last 15, 20 years, online obituaries, legacy and whatnot. And so I put in Paul Landis, any agent you can name that I know is still alive, to see if, you know, it sounds morbid that they still passed on. And I put his name in, like, oh my God, he passed away in June of last year, and all these months I didn't know about it. So then I was like, well, I'm free to say what he told me. And one of the things he revealed to me, and the book backs up everything, he gave me the name of a subject, Lloyd John Wilson. Lloyd John Wilson also goes by several other aliases. And I found documents from the Mary Farrell Library, Mary Farrell Foundation, and other sources in the National Archives that corroborate this guy being a threat to the president, to the point where there's I can't stress this enough. Pre-November 22nd, 1963 reports about him, they stretch back to September 63 and go up to like about a month or so after the assassination. What's so important about this is this name was unknown to anybody in the research community, never been mentioned in a book, a blog, nothing before. And it was a Secret Service agent, initially through this young intermediary, was telling me about the name. I find these documents, and I'm like, oh, my God. And with the plot gets thicker, Len. Then it turns out the agents who are filing reports on him were former White House detail agents who left the detail in the summer of 63, right when these reports are being generated. So what happens is, like, one of them is Jim Giovannetti. He guarded President Kennedy multiple times in Hyannisport in 62 and 63. He leaves the detail in the summer, just in time to join the San Francisco office to write reports about this Lloyd John Wilson. Ed Z. Tucker from the Chicago office, Maurice Martineau from the Chicago office, Joseph Noonan, all these agents, other ones too. Oh, Tony Sherman left the White House detail in October after filing a report in late September about Lloyd John Wilson. The timing is incredible. They're filing reports and they just left the detail to go to a field office and they're writing about this guy. It makes me strongly suspect that Lloyd John Wilson was a moving threat, a moving crime, and they had to get rid of, you know, certain agents and say, hey, you're off the detail. We want you to go to a field office, hunt this guy down. In fact, his present whereabouts were unknown at certain points in the summer of 63, and the reports are all in the book, and there's like 30 or so. And I have, for people that don't want to take the time to actually read the reports cover to cover, I give a synopsis on them so the person can say, okay, Vince, what's this report? My mind's fried on this. What's this report's significance? And the big thing, again, you'll see how many pre-November 63 reports there are. How many former White House detail agents just left the detail to go to a field office and they're investigating this Lloyd John Wilson, who's the gentleman that Nemo Ciacchino and the other guy reached out to me out of the blue to give me this information. So it's all the sequence of events. If I didn't have these personal tragedies, and he said, oh, I don't want you to put my – and I honor confidence. I'm afraid of lawsuits. I'm afraid of any trouble. And I just honor confidence. And he was like, well, Vince, I don't want my name in any of your writings. I've seen like your writings online. I'm thinking, okay, I can't. It's okay. When I'm gone, you can reveal it. Well, again, all those months, I didn't know he passed away until January this year. And I realized, Jesus, I have a book to write. And there's even so much more than that. I mean, that just covers the first two chapters. It's maybe a tacky phrase to use, but it's going to blow people's mind. I've uncovered a whole bunch of other threats that have never been published anywhere. Names, locations in the United States. People are just going to be like, tons of new information this book about prior threats to Kennedy. At the very least, at a bare minimum, it's going to make the reader say, wow, the Secret Service was aware of all these mortal threats to the president. They wanted to blast him. There was a bullet hole in President Kennedy's helicopter right where the seat where he normally sits at. There was an article, a newspaper article talking about this. Yes, these are all months before the assassination. This isn't after the assassination where people could say, oh, this is all full of crap. These are actual bona fide newspaper articles I had to pay money to get from newspapers.com. They're republished in the book, and you'll see, oh, my God, look at all the threats of President Kennedy, mortal threats all over the country. And the Secret Service investigating, the big one's Lloyd John Wilson, but there's other ones, and it leads, that's why I call it a visual investigation and the other traces of conspiracy, because it's not just the plot to kill Kennedy in Chicago, but it's a total corroboration of Abraham Bolden. And then the other major corroboration for Abraham Bolden was, in the late 1990s, the Assassination Records Review Board uncovered a late 1960s investigation of Abraham Bolden, who at that time was incarcerated for that phony, you know, frame up about the documents he allegedly found. So they put him where Richard Case Nagel was. It did basically try to make him look bad. Oh, he's a convict now, whatnot. But the bottom line is, they were investigating what Abraham Bolden was investigating, and they hit pay dirt. But when these were released in the late 90s, they actually weren't released in the late 90s. Actually, they were only released until about 8-9 years ago, if that. And what it was it's one of those document dumps. And I think what happened was, people totally went in one or not the other. They didn't understand the ramifications of what he was reporting. Like, no one I knew ever reported about these documents, because I guess it's Secret Service and these names didn't mean anything to anyone. Everyone's searching for familiar names like James Jesus Angleton and Alan Dulles. So names that they don't really know what they are, they're just like, well, who are these people? Turns out Abraham Bolden, before the assassination, okay, this is all before the assassination, and this is during the trip to Chicago, November 2nd, in the days leading up to Chicago, he's investigating Puerto Rican subjects of interest. And these Puerto Rican subjects of interest were convicted in the 50s of a shootout in Congress at the state capitol of trying to kill congressmen. And they did years in jail for it. And again, I don't want to give away everything in the book, but there's a tremendous tie-in to the Kennedy assassination with it. Now, do we have Abraham Bolden, and I name the names that are in the book. You'll see the documents for yourself. But these gentlemen are number one suspects for a prior stop in Chicago, March 23rd, 1963. Not the famous November 2nd one, but March 23rd, 1963, Kennedy came to Chicago. In the documents, we see Abraham Bolden, Gerald Blaine of the Kennedy Detail, a whole bunch of other famous agents. And it's this, they talk about a postcard threat to Kennedy's life. They beefed up security. More importantly, another agent, George McNally, talks about matter-of-factly that we got wind of Puerto Rican snipers, plural, not singular, plural, in Chicago for the March 23rd, 63. Helicopters searched the roofs of buildings during the motorcade and no threats occurred. It's like, well, wait a minute. Oh, my God. Time out. Some lone nut Oswald allegedly is going to kill Kennedy a few months later. But in March of 63, Puerto Rican snipers, plural, are out to kill Kennedy a few days before the Chicago plot, because I definitely believe there was a plot. Abraham Bolden is checking on Puerto Rican persons of interest that are named in the documents, and I actually named them. I actually found photographs of them and everything. And again, these guys aren't just, oh, there's this local crazies, Vince. They did time in federal prison for shooting a congressman. It was a famous thing in 1954. A lot of people are aware of 1950, the attempt on Truman. That was two Puerto Rican nationalists. They tried to kill Truman. Well, they also tried to kill Eisenhower. James Hagerty, Eisenhower's press secretary, I found articles, New York Times, talking about how there was two threats from Puerto Rican nationalists, plural, to kill Eisenhower. There's a threat March 23rd. And then we have Abraham Bolden checking out specific names. When I go to look up the names, I'm like, my God, these men tried to kill U.S. congressmen at the state capitol, Washington, D.C. It strains credulity to think Oswald acted alone when you see some of this stuff. It's going to be hard-pressed for lone nutters to say, oh, Vince, there's nothing to this. So we have Oswald, an alleged lone nut. We have a hell of a lot of other lone nuts in 63, and a lot of them are pairing up together in pairs and triplets, and they're doing things. They're casting threats on Kennedy. Like, again, a newspaper article that no one ever published before talks about James Riley, the chief of the Secret Service. They found a bullet hole in Kennedy's helicopter right by the seat that he normally sits at. This stuff is going to be amazing. Like I said, the early feedback I'm getting from some people who got the Kindle version are just like, Vince, this is blockbuster stuff. It's a lot. It's like 90% of this information is stuff that's never been published before. And it's total vindication for Abraham Bolden. And in my opinion, it's the reason why Abraham Bolden was framed and made to look like a goofball afterwards. He's the only Secret Service agent up to that time and for many years after that ever did any time for anything. Abraham Bolden was a decorated Secret Service agent. He was a decorated Pinkerton detective. He was a decorated Illinois State Trooper. And he's going to try to do a cheap bribe when he has a wife and kids and a great career. And these were guys that he was trying to put away. And the one convict even admitted to the judge in Abraham Bolden's trial that I was told by the attorney general to lie in the Abraham Bolden case. But they didn't want to hear about it. They wanted to put this black man away and totally make him look like a goofball. Because for all time, people could say, oh, Vince, Abraham Bolden's a convict. But forget about that. Even if you want to say, oh, Vince, he's a convict, whatever. The Secret Service of the late 60s, the top brass were looking into what Abraham Bolden was coming up with. They hit pay dirt. And only in the late 1990s did the Assassination Records Review Board get these documents. And then, for some reason, I have no idea why, they didn't surface until like 2017, 2018. And when I saw online blogs and people talking on forums, I never heard anybody mention these documents. And again, I think it's because they were Secret Service related. They were strange names. So they just – people were so fixated on CIA and familiar names. They're probably like, who is this Puerto Rican guy? Or whatever. I don't care about this. See? That goes to show you. It's the uncovered things. And yeah, so this is a long-winded way of saying that's the reason why there was another book. I went on a retirement tour last year. There wasn't going to be any more books. And when my mom passed away, I was really done with research. It was just a fluke Google search when I saw Nemo passed away. I was like, okay, I'm free to reveal this. And then I found more information. And yeah, so.
Right. Well, you're on quite a roll there. In your introduction, it starts off with a book that had to be written. And so, yeah, I think you've really sold interest in it to anybody who's on the fence thinking, what should I get another book? But there is more information coming out. And the thing that's always interested to me is that it goes against the mainstream media, against the Walter Cronkites and the Dan. You know, it just they kept harping lone assassin. Lee Oswald did it. Everyone go back to sleep.
Right.
And you know, like you mentioned, low nutters. I mean, I almost call them the people that think the world is flat.
Just, yes.
You know, it's crazy not to think that. And even with some of the things that happened lately to former President Trump, where somebody shot, you go, well, how did they let that guy in? How did he get up on the roof? How did he get a rifle in there? He was there with a scope. You know, so that's kind of like, no, these things happen. And either a guard that, you know, a presidential guard has been told, you're not needed this day. You stand down. You just put replacements in. You do, and you've gone through that in the Kennedy assassination to show how people were kind of moved around a chessboard or on holiday or, you know. And
yes.
And this book is taking this further now.
Well, it's the first book on the Chicago plot, and also it's the first published book to talk about the Trump assassination attempt. Chris Milligan, the publisher, is Vince, because it was in the middle when we were getting this to go for publication that the first Trump assassination attempt happened. He said, Vince, you got to do something about this. So as a forward to the book, in the middle of introducing the book here, I spent 3 detailed pages detailing what went wrong in the assassination attempt against former President Trump. And the thing, it's crazy what a small world it is. The shooter, Thomas Matthew Crooks, is also from my community of Bethel Park, Pennsylvania. I'm a suburb of Pittsburgh called Bethel Park. He was also from a suburb of Pittsburgh called Bethel Park. And he worked at the same skilled nursing home that my late mother was staying at in November. I said, this is crazy, Chris. I said, this is almost like this is meant to be that I'm writing a book. Here I am. I'm including several pages about the Trump attempt per your request. And I still couldn't get over it. Like, my God, the shooter was from my community. He lived just a few blocks away. And he was working at the skilled nursing home. My mother, we didn't know who he was at the time, obviously. And then, obviously, Nemo Ciacina passing away. And we found that in January. It made me realize, my God, I can actually publish this guy. Because I figured, you know what? If I don't say his name, if I don't reveal who it is, it's worthless. Because people are going to be like, Vince, we can't get the name. We can't get the Dawkins behind us. We just have your word for it. Come on, man. Well, see, now with his name being released, they're going to see reports from Nemo Ciacina. They're going to see about this Lloyd John Wilson. They're going to see about a whole lot of other things. And really, like Joe Back is a pretty well-known researcher in the late 90s, did an Assassination Records Review Board synopsis of the House Select Committee records, and it's online. And one of them talks about the House Select Committee had Nemo Ciacina's address and phone number. See, the House Select Committee in the late 70s tried to get in contact with a lot of former Secret Service agents. Some were successful, some were not, because at that time, it was only between 15, 16 years or so removed from the assassination. A lot of the guys were still active, and he was one of them. So a lot of them were like, no comment, I have nothing to say, I don't want to get on the record. And a few of them did, but a lot of them didn't want to be bothered. Like Paul Landis was one of them who came with that book last year. Well, what Paul Landis said was damning to his whole premise. Paul Landis came out and said, yes, I stand behind the veracity of the two reports that I submitted to the Warren Commission. In the two reports he submitted to the Warren Commission, he said the shot came from the front. But he didn't tell any of his readers that when the book came out last year and created such a hoopla. I think that is so borderline evil to come out with a massive best-selling book and you don't even have the temerity to mention you wrote two reports saying a shot came from the front. And in 1979, outside contact report, it's a former agent Paul Landis, you know, stands by the veracity of the reports he wrote. And yet he hasn't bothered to, in even one sentence in his entire book, tell the readers that. That is really, I can't even think of the words I really want to say about it. But that's what when I did a review for Kennedy's and King's about it, I made note of that. And there was even some people, their seasoned researchers, that, Vince, I had no idea. I'm like, well, there you go. Isn't that pretty crazy that an agent on the FOB car thought a shot came from the front and he wrote about it twice. And then, you know, Sam Kennedy, the driver, the FOB car, also believed that Kennedy's, the rear of his head came off. Oh, another thing about Paul Landis, not to get on a tangent here, but Paul Landis in 2016 at the Sixth Floor Museum, matter of fact, says that the right rear of Kennedy's head blew off, which corroborates Clint Hill and a lot of the Parkland doctors and people at Bethesda. But yeah, the one thing I talk about in the introduction of this book, Lynn, is Harry Livingstone in his book Killing the Truth used an anonymous source that he called somewhat unoriginally The Source. And I remember people were so dissatisfied, like, oh, come on, Harry, we don't have his name. We can't check on his bona fides. You're claiming all this stuff, but it's behind some guy that you can't even name. And there's no sources and no documentation. That's why no one believed it. And, you know, I don't want to say that Harry made that up. But at the same time, we couldn't check out the bona fides. And that's why I was damned. All my books name names, produce evidence. They're highly footnoted, sourced. I'm not coming out with a book that's going to like, oh, agent unnamed told me some stuff. It's like, oh, come on, Vince. You know, because I'd be skeptical too. So you get his name. You get his photograph. You get other reports about other assassination attempts he was involved in. And you get a lot of corroboration about this Lloyd John Wilson name that I never heard of. And I even did searches through books and online searches, and I never saw anybody write about this guy. So I guess there's a lot of new information. There's it's updated from the first book. There's a tremendous amount of information that corroborates Abraham Bolden that back in, you know, between 1993 and 2013, we only knew so much. Well, because the Assassination Records Review Board document releases and my, you know, talking to Nemo and all the documents that came up was just an amazing thing. And it's, I think the thing people are going to come away with is, my God, they want us to believe Oswald acted alone. They want us to believe a whole bunch of Lee Harvey Oswald were friends, acted alone in 63 alone. And there's bullet holes in president's helicopter, you know, Puerto Rican snipers, plural. And another thing that's really going to be amazing, again, this book is heavily illustrated. Actual photographs of police on top of rooftops during Kennedy motorcades. You can actually see them crystal clear with accompanying newspaper articles. Again, Len, this all came out only because I paid a newspaper fee. It took months to dredge these out because the search terms were crazy. If you did motorcade JFK, you got hundreds of unrelated articles talking about people waving at the president and have nothing to do with anything. And out of nowhere, I'd get an article, the Secret Service told us to watch all building rooftops, and we had men stationed on the rooftops. List goes on and on and on of all these Kennedy trips. But again, you see photographs too, and you get Secret Service corroboration. And again, I can't stress this enough. Before the assassination or all these photographs and documents, it's not like, oh, this is after the fact that they're alleging these things, Vince. No, it's before the freaking assassination. So the $64 million question is, well, wait a minute. And much longer motorcades like Tampa was 28 miles long. They could guard every multi-story building rooftop with military and police. Yet Kennedy's motorcade in Dallas was like between 10 and 11 miles, like a third. And they couldn't watch building rooftops. And again, for the most conservative person out there that believes Oswald did it or was involved, all right, have your little Oswald in the window for your fantasy. Well, police on rooftops, military on rooftops, they would have spotted him long before Kennedy even got there. And they probably would have took out the subject if he tried to do anything. The bottom line is, it's just crazy. You just look at the major motorcade before in Florida, And again, agents were in the back of the car for the 28 miles. There was a military man in the limousine between the driver and the agent in charge of the trip. They were going at fast speeds, many motorcycles, building rooftops. And again, I got this in documents. But more importantly, Russell Groover was the head Tampa motorcycle officer. And he matter-of-factly told me when I interviewed him several years back, is, oh, Vince, oh, yeah, all multi-story buildings were guarded with military and police armed to the teeth. And so I started to think like a defense attorney. It's still bona fide, fantastic information. But like, okay, what about ranch dwellings, one-story dwellings? What'd you guys do for that? He said, well, we had the military and police lining the streets facing the crowd. So all one-story ranch dwellings were on eye level. So we had all those covered on the ground. Is just anything that was two stories and up, those were the ones that were guarded. And again, I found photographs. I got a Getty Images, beautiful photograph. And it shows the people on rooftops, the police, and it says, the caption says, sharpshooters guard as President Kennedy travels by in a motorcade. And again, when he goes to Paris, France, they're talking about thousands of police are on rooftops. And I found a Getty Images photograph. You could see the gendarme on the rooftops, that gendarme's French for police. They're on the top of the roofs. And again, newspaper articles. And again, it's going to show what's going to be amazing to people. I think you're going to see, my God, Kennedy got a lot of protection in prior trips. I think the reason why he got a lot of prior great security is because the Secret Service, they were much aware of all these prior threats, okay? Then I discovered Secret Service monitors for the president. I touched on this in the first book, but this is even more detailed because thanks to the Assassination Records Review Board, three specific names of Secret Service agents that were on Kennedy's trips. And the thing that's rich about it, the one, Glenn Bennett, people probably know of him, he was in the FOB car. He lied to the House Select Committee under oath, says, I wasn't on the Florida trip. So if you read that in the late 90s, you're thinking, well, okay, this guy's saying he wasn't there. I have no way to dispute him one way or another. It's a 1-2 punch, Len. In 2013, a book that came out only for retired Secret Service agents, not for the general public. I have the photo in my book. It has a caption photo of Glenn Bennett. So now we finally know what he looks like. And oh my God, not only is he on the other trips, but more importantly, because somebody could still say, Vince, maybe it's not him. It just looks a lot like him. Wrong answer. Other documents came out of the Assassination Records Review Board, shows him on the trips that he lied about. He was on all the stops on Florida, Cape Canaveral, Miami, Tampa, Palm Beach. He said he was on the Florida trip. He was on all four segments of the Florida trip, and he was riding in the FOB car right behind Kennedy. Turns out in San Antonio the day before, he's riding in the FOB car, but he's riding in the seat normally reserved for the shift leader. He's no shift leader. He's an intelligence agent. And again, only in 2012, Clint Hill came out of his book, Mrs. Kennedy and Me. What everybody missed is something I picked up on. Clint Hill says, Glenn Bennett, who was handling intelligence for us on the trip, is like, oh, really? Because the official story, I'm leaving out, is that the official story is Glenn Bennett was just there as a temp. He was just there as a temporary member of the White House detail. He was not there for any special purpose, Vince. That was the official story. And I find out, no, oops, your comrade blew the cover and said that he was an intelligence agent on the trip because he was a protective research agent. Those are the ones who protect for threats. They normally stay in Washington, D.C., go through their Rolodexes and their files for potential threats to the president all over the country. But the guy's riding around in motorcades in mid-late November, and he's lying to the House Select Committee. And wait to hear this, Len. He had a Secret Service attorney seated next to him. The gentleman who interviewed Glenn Bennett for the House Select Committee said that Secret Service attorney Meehan, I forget his first name now, I think it was Tony. Tony Meehan sitting next to Glenn Bennett in case he needed any counseling. It's like, oh, really? It's because you're going to say some things you didn't want to admit to. But see, because the House Select Committee didn't have anything to go on. They're just taking this gentleman by his word. He's on the Florida trip. It's not until years later, decades later, little old me finds him on all these trips he's lying about, photographic evidence of him in FOB cars. It's like, why is he there? He was there to monitor mortal threats to the president that were in progress. And we're supposed to believe little old Lee Harvey Oswald got lucky when Glenn Bennett's feet away on the same street looking out for threats as he was in the Florida trip and all the prior Texas stops. And he was also on the New York trip. He didn't volunteer. And I know I'm throwing a lot at you, Len, and your listeners. But another thing came out, again, thank God for this newspaper.com. And you have to pay a fee for them. And it took months of dredging. But I found, of all things, Glenn Bennett's parents. It was either November 22nd or was the next day. was a little Dover, New Hampshire article talks about how they were thrilled that their son was part of the White House detail, and he was on the New York, Florida, and Texas trip. So the parents back in 63 in this obscure article that never saw the light of day till I found it. It's in the book. Talk about he's on the trips. And here's Glenn Bennett under oath. I wasn't on the Florida trip. Mentions nothing about New York. And again, he's on all these trips because he's doing a duty he doesn't normally do. He normally stays in Washington. Protective research agents, intelligence agents stay in Washington to monitor threats to the president, people who write crank letters, any kind of dealings they have. They don't go into the field. Well, it was only until November of 63 that I started to find evidence that these men, there's two other men that are named in the book, are suddenly on all these trips. And I got them tripped up on it, too, when I interviewed the gentleman. Other colleagues of theirs, they're all falling over themselves, not realizing, well, I don't know what he was there for. I don't remember him. And it's like, wait. You sat in the same car with him, and you're telling us you don't remember who he is and what he was there for. Yeah, again, Clint Hill, it's everything's compartmentalized, Len. You know, back in 2012 when Clint Hill did his major best-selling book, Mrs. Kennedy and Me, that sentence wasn't noticed by anybody but me. Because everyone's just reading about Jackie, and it's like, you know, Reader's Digest. Oh, this is thrilling to read about Jackie's travails and everything. And then Clint Hill spills the beans and says that he's handling intelligence. Like, oh, really? Because your buddy Gerald Blaine and his colleagues made it sound like, oh, no, Vince, you're barking up the wrong tree. He was only there as a temp. He wasn't there as an intelligence agent. So, again, people, after reading this book, if you believe Oswald acted alone, you have something wrong with you. That's all I'm going to say. There's just no way. It doesn't even get into the nuts and bolts of Dallas and shooters and single bullet theory. You can have that. It's for the birds. Other people have covered that ad nauseum. This is about the volume and the rich depth of prior threats to the president, Chicago in particular, and Secret Service verification of these threats in documents that have never been published before. And again, this is a book that had to be written because until he passed away and until I found these documents, there wasn't going to be a book. I had nothing to go on. I said this gentleman didn't want to be named, and it was a fluke I found out he passed away, like it always is every year. You know, it's a morbid thing. And these guys are in their 70s, 80s, 90s, you know, and through attrition, they pass away. And it's like, oh, and every few months on Facebook, I'll make a posting like, hey, like I did a few weeks back. Robert Burke, who was a member of Kennedy's White House detail, passed away. He was 85. You know, so I'll post about that and whatnot. And that's what happened here was like I put Nemo Ciocina's name. I was like, oh, my God. He passed away, and he passed away in June, a couple months after speaking to him, and I didn't even realize, like, all those months went by again because my mother passed away, and research was the first thing from my mind, but then I realized, my God, what he told me, and then all the other information I uncovered, it was in conjunction with that, and the Abraham Bolden information about Puerto Rican, subjects he was – Abraham Bolden is so corroborated by some of the things he alleged in years past. I can't wait for people's reaction. This is really going to be something else. So, yeah. Sorry, I'm throwing a lot at you, I know.
No, that's okay, because what I hope is that people hear this and are inspired enough to go purchase the book that will back up your research. And it's good research, so there's other people. They're still writing books say Lee Oswald did it or the Warren Commission had it right. So that's what is just the real poverty of the situation, that you get these guys and now they're going to various conferences and they still want to say, you know. And one thing while you were talking, it reminded me of Fletcher Prouty talking about when he went to Mexico City.
Yes.
With the Secret Service. And he said, this is what they do, right? You know, like the going ahead of time, the welding manhole covers shut, the, you know, taking away mailboxes. And they plan the whole thing and they're augmented.
Right.
Right? And so then when you find out that the power that is protecting a president is relaxed, it's told, you're not needed this day. You can stand down. That's when you get somebody else in there. And it's just of interest. And the poverty of the whole thing is that the American public has had to take this. I mean, a few people right away thought the Warren Commission was fake.
Yeah.
Vince Landrieu
and Weisberg,
Mark Lane.
Yeah,
and going, there's no way. There's no way, right? So it's taken, I don't know how to say it, but amateur historians. And then
people like yourself,
you know, authors and that. So you don't work for the government, but here you're doing a critique and say, not only have you guys got it wrong, but you're misrepresenting what happened completely to the point where it looks like you're involved.
Right. Oh, another thing too, Len, to follow up on Fletcher Prouty, I'm sure you're aware of this. It was obscene, but the good news is Fletcher Prouty has been totally corroborated many times till Sunday, because what happened was there were people, when Fletcher Prouty passed away, there was people on the other side saying, oh, that's only for Mexico. That was only for Eisenhower. That was only an isolated incident. It was probably with other dignitaries. That's all full. And there were some people that actually turned to say, I don't even think there is a Secret Service manual. I've got massive corroboration that, A, there was a Secret Service manual. Chief Inspector Michael Trina, who I interviewed, wrote the manual. There's a page from the manual in Volume 18 of the Warren Commission talking about the drinking incident, number one. Paul Landis, in his book, talks about he had to read the Secret Service manual cover to cover. Bottom line on that is, in 1960, a book written during President Eisenhower's term called The United States Secret Service, written by the Secret Service themselves, not to some amateur author, but an actual Secret Service agent, Harry Neal, talks about the Secret Service manual and how Chief Inspector Michael Trina was behind that. Well, Chief Inspector Michael Trina, in that same book from 1960 and also another book from 1962, it's almost the same verbiage. It's also reprinted in my book, talks about whenever the president is in a motorcade, police or military line the streets and also line rooftops. So you got all this pre-assassination corroboration from Secret Service in books, in official documents, in newspaper articles, and now also in photographs too. So for those lone nutters who believe Oswald acted alone, we're supposed to believe, oh, building rooftops were normally guarded. They weren't guarded in Dallas. Oh my God, they normally were since the FDR days. Oh, another thing too, and I mentioned in the book too, and there's a link to the video in the book, but it's also on my YouTube channel. One of the great things that happened during the COVID lockdown of 2020, thank God I have a video burner at the time. I could burn stuff off of YouTube. A gentleman had a tremendous YouTube channel of historical videos from this 1968 Chicago convention, you know, Democrats and whatnot, and a whole bunch of other stuff from Truman up to, like, I don't know, Obama, all these wonderful political things were on TV and whatnot, just treasure trove of stuff. Well, his channel got wiped out, probably due to copyright infringements. Well, the good thing is in 2020, I grabbed some of the things. Thank God I did. One of them is worth its weight in gold. And what it is ABC reporter Ron Gardner telling millions of people that normally building rooftops are guarded. We can't understand how this could have happened to President Kennedy. He's talking on the day of the assassination. He's talking, in fact, President Kennedy isn't officially pronounced dead yet. And he's telling the whole world, because ABC was simulcast. That's back when all the networks picked up on stuff. So you had millions and millions and millions of people seeing the ABC broadcast, as well as CBS and NBC. And he's telling everybody, and again, I got the video on my YouTube channel several times over. I saved the video as well. And it's talked about in the book, in the link to the videos in the book. It's like, my God, can we get even more corroboration? Here's a newsman saying building rooftops are normally guarded. I can't understand how this could have happened. So again, Kennedy goes to a city he's warned about by Senator Fulbright and several other people. Kennedy says the Secret Service took care of everything. Henry, meaning Henry Gonzalez, San Antonio congressman, there's nothing to worry about. He told Marty Underwood, Democratic National Committeeman, Marty, you worry about me too much. But there's always warnings of threats and stuff going on in Dallas, in particular Texas in general, but Dallas in particular. All these threats and warnings. Welcome to Dallas, Mr. President. You know, the wanted for treason signs, all that. And they're not lying streets. The sheriff's department's told to stand down. We don't have rooftops guarded. No men are on the back of limousine. They make up a bull crap story. I try to clean it up about agents not being on the back of the car. They blame Kennedy for it. They blame Kennedy for the bubble top on the car. But again, Len, it's only in the last 5 to 15 years that thousands of photos and films have been released public domain and just from digitization. And I have many prior motorcades. In fact, I made a video on my YouTube channel of every known motorcade of President Kennedy, 61 to 63. And you see agents on the back of the car, the bubble top used. It turns out he used the bubble top in almost one half of all his motorcades, often in very good weather. Okay. You had military in the car, often between the driver and the agent in charge. You had many motorcycles surrounding the car. You had surprisingly fast speeds. And this corroborates what the agents I spoke to told me. Bob Lilly, an agent of the White House detail for most of Kennedy's term, he left in October of 63. Interesting. Again, a lot of the agents left in the summer and fall. But he told me, oh, yeah, Vince, President Kennedy had nothing to do with us not being on the back of the car. We were off on the back of the car. In fact, he talked about a trip to Puerto Rico, He says, yeah, Roy Keller and I were hanging on the back of the car at 50 miles an hour. The bubble top was on, and I found a photograph years later. My God, there's Bob Lilly. Roy Kellerman hanging onto the back of the car. There's the bubble top. It's not raining. It's a bright, sunshiny day. And one of the newspaper articles talks about how the spectators complained because Kennedy went by so fast. And I'm thinking maybe the reason why he had that security in Puerto Rico is from the other things you're going to read about in the book, talking about Puerto Rican threats to Truman, Eisenhower, and Kennedy before he ever got to Dallas in this alleged low nut Oswald. And again, it's all backed up by it's all in the book itself. I mean, it's got hundreds of footnotes to sources, but more importantly, the sources are in the book themselves, the actual documents, the pictures, you know, got the interviews of these agents and so on and so forth. And again, you're going to come away with, okay, they want us to swallow one man at the lone Dallas, but they also want us to swallow he was set up like a sitting duck. They want us to swallow he had all these mortal threats to his life, just a flurry of threats through 63 alone. And yet they also had Secret Service monitors of threats on these trips, and they're lying about being there. In fact, there's more agents, Len, that lied about being on trips. Tim McIntyre, turns out he was the roommate of Glenn Bennett on the Texas trip. He lied and said, I wasn't scheduled for the Chicago trip. I also wasn't on the Florida trip. Documents show he was on stops in Florida. He lied too. Another agent from the White House detail, Bert DeFries, told the House Select Committee, I had nothing to do with that Chicago trip. He was on what turned out to be the canceled Chicago trip. He lied about it. But again, you know what it was, Len? Back in the late 70s, up to the late 90s, up to maybe for eternity, they were hoping. No one was going to compare and contrast anything. In fact, we, as we know, and I mentioned this in the book too, the Secret Service destroyed many motorcade documents in 1995 after they were told not to by the Assassination Records Review Board. And I detail it in the book, the specific trips that were destroyed, all late summer, early fall trips, just a coincidence, I'm sure. And this, the ARB seriously wanted to hold congressional hearings. They were mad as hell about the destruction. The CIA didn't destroy documents. The FBI didn't destroy documents. The NSA didn't destroy documents. Only the Secret Service. In fact, when they were on that Kennedy documentary by Oliver Stone and other documentaries, Tom Samulek of the ARB and John Thunheim said, the only agency that ever gave us any trouble was the Secret Service. And Kennedy destroyed documents because they didn't want anybody comparing and contrasting. The little old me out of the wilderness, amateur me that works for a living. I'm not getting rich off this. I live in an apartment. I don't have a house or nothing. I mean, my wife and I live within our means. I'm not rich to put them howly. I work for a living. But the bottom line is, little old me in the wilderness, on my own dime, find these documents that were either ignored or never saw the light of day before. I interviewed these Secret Service agents, a lot of them before they shuffled off this mortal coil. And again, compare and contrast it. And again, to somebody off the street, Glenn Bennett might as well be Joe Jones. Who is that, Vince? I have no idea who this is. What's the ramifications of this? And it's only because, I see these documents have been, in fact, Joe Backus in 1996, when he detailed these documents, he did a really good job summarizing them all. And Glenn Bennett's lies went in one ear and not the other, because even the research community didn't know he was lying about being on these trips. So when you compare, you ask yourself, wait a minute, why are they lying about being on the trips? My God, not only was he on the trip, he was in the follow-up car. Why are all these monitors of threats on the trips, and they never were on these trips before, to the point where they were even telling me, when the agents I spoke to in interviews were telling me, oh, yeah, it was only after the assassination we started to have an intelligence agent on the trips with us to monitor threats. It's like, wrong answer. They're joining right before the assassination on these trips right before Dallas. Wrong answer there. And again, you just put it all together, and it's like, it just tells me this was a moving crime. Yes, it was Chicago. That's why the book's called The Plot to Kill Chicago. But you can even take that out there, and that's why I call it The Other Traces of Conspiracy Leading to the Assassination of JFK. And I also call it a visual investigation, because you can see for your own self, documents don't lie in newspaper articles, and they're all contemporary. That's why I can't stress enough. So much of this information is before the assassination. It isn't like from the Garrison trial or some guy trying to make a buck years later, making stuff up, as skeptics think. No. This is all in the domain, but it's there years before, months before, weeks before the assassination. That's what makes it powerful. Just like I detail briefly in the book, as I did in the past, everybody talks about the mysterious deaths, which are very important. Well, one of them was Thomas Shipman. He was one of the driver agents of Kennedy. He died October 14th, 1963 at Camp David. Out of thousands of agents have come and gone since 1865, only 37 have died in line of duty. Tom Shipman's the only one who died from the Kennedy era. He's the only person to ever die at Camp David. He just passed a rigorous physical, an annual physical. And you have to take physicals in Secret Service, especially for agents that drove the president, because if this guy gets a heart attack behind the wheel, Kennedy and the First Lady could all be killed along with the pop. Well, he goes to Camp David and he dies. And here's the thing. He dies of an alleged heart attack, but he's buried 2 days later. Toxicology tests take weeks, if not months, to come out. They didn't do any toxicology tests. You know what it was? He wasn't stabbed or shot. So they said, oh, country doctor, oh, he died of a heart attack. That's all we could see. There's no evidence of anything else. So they threw him in the ground 2 days later. And it was only in the late 90s I discovered this. And what it was, Len, this book was worth its weight in gold. It's a book that was not actually published. It was a Kinko's affair. Andy Winarczyk of the Last Raw Bookshop has it. It's called A Million Miles of Presidents. What it was George McNally is a former Secret Service agent who became the head of the White House Communication Agency. He was there from Truman through LBJ, maybe even early Nixon. But the point is, he was on all these presidential motorcades, especially for Eisenhower and Kennedy, like crazy. I think he was on all of them. And again, when he wrote this book, he matter-of-factly says, Thomas Shipman, one of Kennedy's drivers, died suddenly. And I'm reading this in 1997 going, what? Who's Thomas Shipman? A driver? Driver, he had to be an agent. And just in the interest of time, I'll tell you, it took months and years, but I found it. Oh my God, he was an actual Secret Service agent. I have photographs of him. And then a few years after my discovery, the official Secret Service agent roll call of people have passed away, all of a sudden has his picture. Says he died of a heart attack at Camp David, October 14, 63, but he drove Kennedy in many motorcades. It was him or Greer, sometimes Sam Kinney. And Bill Greer is one of my suspects, three suspects. The other one's Emory Roberts and Floyd Boring. It makes you think, wow, okay, Thomas Shipman dies of an alleged heart attack. It gave Greer the opportunity to drive Kennedy, which he did ineptly. And there's, I think, a lot more to it meets that than that is, Thomas Shipman, he had one daughter, Laura, who I sought out several years ago for my other books, and she didn't seek remuneration, fame, nothing. She just matter-of-factly told me, oh, yeah, we always suspected something was wrong. But my father, he just passed an annual physical. We always thought something was fishy with that, and he was buried so fast. And she said Dr. Berkeley was behind the whole matter. He took care of everything with burying him quickly. And the thing that really is mind-blowing to me is he died October 14th, and other than some obscure Maryland area newspaper articles, real small ones, like a paragraph long, maybe a couple paragraphs, Washington Post, none of the major articles, newspapers ever mentioned his death. What's really weird is President Kennedy never mentioned his death. Pierre Salinger never mentioned his death. And you might say, well, Vince, me, because he was a Secret Service agent. Wrong answer. 10 years later, Cliff Dietrich, an agent for Nixon's White House detail, died unexpectedly. Guess what Nixon did? He had a teary-eyed press conference where he talked about Cliff Dietrich, one of the brave souls that protected me, died. Pat Nixon and Tricia Nixon went to the damn funeral in this newspaper article. So there's all this attention 10 years later to an agent who died unexpectedly, young man died unexpectedly, 10 years before. And we know Kennedy was so kind-hearted, no matter what his faults were. He was a great president in a lot of ways, but he was very kind-hearted. Him and Pierre Salinger don't mention anything to the press. It's like radio silence over one of your driver agents who dies at Camp David. And it took little old me, and only because, again, when I talked about that book, Million Miles of Presidents, it was a Kinko's affair. It wasn't like John Q. Citizen could go get it. What it was George McNally died in 1970. His widow came out with it in 1982, and it was obviously like a Kinko's affair. She got his manuscript spruced up and did staple copies and went to Kinko's and made like hundreds, maybe thousands, I don't know. Well, Andy Winarczyk has it and had it. And for years I bought it. And that's when I got it. I couldn't believe what I was reading. And I know Joe Backus and other people have it and have referred to it through the years here and there in obscure articles and whatnot. But the bottom line is only because this obscure article I read about this guy, and it was only because I paid like $100 to get this newspaper article, I think, oh my God, they actually did report his death. But it's in this obscure backwater newspaper articles. Why? Why? And again, it certainly leads to suspicion when you have Bill Greer, who slowed the limousine down, looks back twice at Kennedy, which he denied ever seen Kennedy even once, let alone twice. Roy Kellerman says, get out of line, we've been hit. Roy Kellerman tells William Manchester. Greer then looked in the back of the car. Maybe he didn't believe me before we can catch our breath from prior radio shows, Len. Bill Greer died in 1985. His son Richard, I spoke to in 1990 and 1991. And one of the first things I said to him, he was real friendly on the phone. We were talking like human interest stuff about Truman, Eisenhower, Kennedy. I said, what did your father think of President Kennedy? The line went silent to the point I thought it was dead. I was like, sir, Mr. Greer, are you still there? He goes, yeah, I'm still here. So I changed the subject. I went back to him. I said, if you don't mind, sir, what did your father think of President Kennedy? He goes, well, we're Methodists, and JFK was Catholic. For years, that statement in and of itself blew my mind. We're Methodists, and JFK's Catholic, rather than lying to a stranger and say, oh, he loved him, and Kennedy loved him. But it turns out in 2013, the Irish Times in Ireland, their major daily newspaper, did an investigation of Bill Greer. They contacted me. They had my first book. I don't know how they got it, but it's wonderful. Said, Vince, I want to let you know something about William Greer. I already knew that he emigrated to this country, United States, at the age of 19. He was from County Tyrone, Ireland. But more importantly, he was part of the Order of the Orange. So he wore it on his sleeve that he was anti-Catholic. There's been religious wars in Ireland for years, famous U2 song, Sunday Bloody Sunday. But more importantly, if Richard Greer, his son, is telling me, well, we're Methodists and JFK was Catholic, Greer had those thoughts, and he's looking back at Kennedy twice, his foot on the brake. He's disobeying a direct order in common sense and training to hit the gas. And then the guy that could have been driving Kennedy in Texas, Thomas Shipman, dies of a heart attack the month before. And it gets even richer about Thomas Shipman. It turns out, in his daughter confirmed this, they had relatives in Dallas. And Thomas Shipman was looking forward to the Dallas trip in particular. He was looking forward to being part of the motorcade, as he had. In fact, the last motorcade Thomas Shipman drove Kennedy was in late September at the Pinchot Estate with Mary Pinchot Meyer and all that in Milford, PA. But he's in a lot of news footage of when baby Patrick died in August of 63. He's the driver, and I found other motorcades in DC and whatnot. So it's like they rotated. Greer did drive Kennedy most of the time, but a fair amount of times Thomas Shipman did too. So anybody wants to think there's something nefarious, it definitely certainly leads to suspicion. There's so much more, and it's also in this book too, but I just want to put it together. Things, you know, just it's just an amazing confluence of events. If I didn't get that weird call last year, you know, if I didn't do a Google search, if my mom didn't pass away, it's just like how this weird how the stars align for better or for worse. And yeah, so crazy.
Well, very interesting. The Plot to Kill President Kennedy in Chicago and Other Traces of Conspiracy. Man, it's good that there's still good research and authors out there.
I think it's my best book, Len. I really appreciate it. I think of all six books, I think it's the best one. Yeah.
Okay, so they keep getting better. And you know the topic so well, so you know what's important and what to really dig into. So I guess just congratulations on that.
Thanks, man. I really appreciate it.
And,
thanks.
You know, that's it. I get inundated with books and articles from people all the time, you know, and I'm just looking for something that's worthwhile, right? So that's why I appreciate it.
Oh, I really much appreciate it. Thank you to you and all your listeners. Much appreciated, man.
Okay, well, I know we had kind of just a time limit. So just before we wrap up, is there anything that you wanted to get to or bring up that we didn't yet or just forgot about?
I would say that basically covers all the bases. The book provides all the corroboration for what I've been saying. And I really want to thank a couple of the people that have received early copies of the book. The response has been really good. As I know I'm on to something by the reaction I'm getting from grizzled researchers. So,
okay, yeah. Very good. Very good. Trine Day. Do you want to just mention where it's available again?
Yes, thank you. It's available on Amazon and Kindle and paperback. So you can search online, Amazon. It's also available for Trine Day Publishers, their website as well. And it's going to be available worldwide November 8th for the paperback. In America, I think the Kindle snuck out a little early, but look for it November 8th. Yeah. So.
All right. Thanks so much for this prequel interview then. I hope we get a lot of attention. You get pre-orders out of it. Or in America, like you mentioned, you can get the Kindle right now.
Oh, yeah, one more thing. Oh, yeah, one last thing real quick, Glenn. They can also get the book through me. I have some advanced copies. If anyone wants an autographed copy, they can reach me through Facebook or through email. My email is vincebethel@yahoo.com, so they can reach me that way as well. So,
okay, very good. All right. Well, Vince, thank you very much for taking time to talk to me and Black Op Radio today, and we'll talk in the near future, I'm sure.
Sounds good, Glenn. Take care. Thank you.
All right.
Bye-bye.